What if there was one simple pill that could help support your energy, vitality, and cardiovascular function? Well, introducing new and improved Green Tea CR Phytosome formula from Purity Products. It's the power of three of nature's top superfoods, a clinically tested green tea plus curcumin and resveratrol, all in one simple capsule. It's potent, clinically tested, and it works to promote your energy, vitality, cardio health, immunity, and antioxidant defense. Our friends at Purity Products have a free bottle for you today to put to the test. Just pay $4.95 for shipping. Even better, call now and get a second free bottle. Purity's B12 Energy Melts. That's your second free gift. Again, for your free bottles of Green Tea CR and B12 Energy Melts, call 1-800-218-6030. That's 1-800-218-6030. Again, 1-800-218-6030. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today, we're with Dr. Philippe Douillon. He's a board-certified neurologist. He is currently in practice in Hackensack, New Jersey, and Teaneck, New Jersey. Is that correct?
Correct, yep.
And the nature of your practice is a general practice of neurology, but with an emphasis, where appropriate, encouraging your patients to undertake lifestyle measures to keep their brains fit.
Absolutely. Specialty is epilepsy, but I also have had a general neurology practice, and we do focus on making sure people are doing what they're supposed to be doing to keep their bodies and their brains healthy.
Let's take a quick segue into epilepsy for a moment, because there's been talk, and you're well aware of this because this is not brand new. This has been done in the research for decades. Ketogenic diet for especially pediatric epilepsy. What's your take on that? Is that something you ever implement for patients who don't respond to medications, or medications cause unacceptable side effects?
Yeah, so it's something that we actually implement often, and not just for our pediatric population, although that tends to be where a lot of people feel the most comfortable, because generally kids don't just grab for a slice of pizza, where adults can. But it's got, a tremendous amount of benefit. The carbs are can be very devastating to our brains. Mm-hmm. And so restricting the carbs, which our bodies break down into sugar, is incredibly helpful. And we restrict them to the point where our bodies make ketones, which is a much more efficient fuel source for the brain.
Do you ever use keto salts or MCT oil to augment the diet as a, sort of an add-on?
So I don't. I'm primarily an adult epilepsy specialist, so I don't with my adult patients. Oftentimes, it's tough getting them to just restrict the carbs in their in their diet. But when they do, we've seen a tremendous impact. And I'll give you one example.
Sure.
Somebody who's had epilepsy surgery, who's been on multiple medications, continued seizing. And we were able to get her seizure free for 6 months by taking the soda out of her diet.
Hmm. Wow.
Just the soda.
Wow. And with multiple potential harmful ingredients between the caffeine and, or potentially the sugar or the artificial sweeteners, you name it. These are, mind bending ingredients in some ways.
Absolutely. I mean, it's certainly toxic for all of us, but especially if somebody has an underlying predisposition to have a neurological disorder like epilepsy.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that carbs are problematic. Do you subscribe to the grain brain theory of Dr. Perlmutter? Presumably you're aware of his work. He's a functional neurologist, and he advocates a very low carb, gluten free diet, even a ketogenic diet. If, say, you have family history of Alzheimer's disease, say you have an APOE4 gene, which predicts higher susceptibility to Alzheimer's, he's going to say go for the paleo, very low-carb diet to protect your brain. What do you say?
Yeah. So I've read his books, and I think that diet is key in terms of allowing us to live a really healthy, long life. And certainly diet has a negative impact on the brain. I would say that people in general should be trying to minimize their carbs, right? oftentimes, right, when we see people, the way that they eat, it's full of carbs. It's full of processed meats. There's not enough vegetables. There's not enough nuts and seeds in their diet. And so I would subscribe to them minimizing their carb intake.
Are you impressed with some of the research that now shows that the microbiome may have an influence on the brain? Even with conditions as serious as Parkinson's disease, there's some research showing that signals from the gut may affect the brain.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we've always said that the gut is like the second brain. And there's certainly, you know, the leaky gut phenomenon, which is if your gut is inflamed, things that should not be passing through and getting to your bloodstream and up to your brain will. And so, you know, I think a lot of that research is spot on. And we'll even see people who have sensitivity to gluten develop neurological manifestations, which people don't often think about.
Yeah, there's this phenomenon of a certain form of ataxia, which even in patients with no discernible signs of celiac disease, they get better when they go off of gluten. That's, I think, been demonstrated. But other conditions, you know, so-called brain fog lifts sometimes when people go on low-carb, gluten-free diets. There's certainly something to it.
Yep, absolutely. You know, I think it's related to this leaky gut syndrome. I think inflammation plays a huge role in allowing things into the bloodstream that should not be getting there is a significant problem.
Indeed. So when it comes to diet, is there an ideal diet for, you know, the average person, the person who does not yet have any kind of discernible neurological problem? But if you want to protect your brain, keep your brain fit, what do you recommend?
Yeah, so I would recommend minimizing your carb intake. I would recommend, you know, you want to stay away from the processed foods. You want to stay away from a lot of the junk foods. Ideally, you want to eat things as close to the source as possible, right? I mean, you know, it would be great to be able to grow our own foods, but in New York City, that's not necessarily reasonable. But, you know, you certainly don't, you want to pay attention to the chemicals that they're putting inside of our foods, because that has a significant impact.
Mm-hmm. Either in the gut or directly on the brain. There's this theory about what are called neuroexcitatory compounds that may jazz the taste buds, but also jazz the brain and kind of burn out the glutamate circuitry in the brain. Are you in accord with that belief?
Yeah. Look, I think a lot of what's put, the chemicals that are put into a lot of the foods that we take, certainly can trigger an addictive component, right? Whether it excites our brains because it stimulates the glutamate receptors, that certainly can be true. But these things have a really negative impact.
Indeed. What about the supposed benefits of a vegan or vegetarian diet? Is that the ideal diet in some ways for someone concerned about brain health, or is animal protein permissible and even essential?
Well, I think you can take in some animal protein. I know people that are vegan that do great. I know people that are vegan who are incredibly muscular. Mm-hmm. So I think having a vegan diet is a very healthy way to go for a lot of people. I think people who want to take in meat, they can certainly do that. But you have to be really mindful of the amount that you're taking in and where you're getting the meat from. Ideally, you know, you want to be eating things, like I said, as close to the source as possible, as natural as possible, a lot of vegetables, nuts, seeds, some fruits. And if you're going to take in some animal protein, it should be very little. It shouldn't make up 3/4 of your plate.
It's so-called the anti-inflammatory diet, in other words, rich in omega-3 fatty acids, polyphenols from spices and fresh fruits and vegetables and beverages like tea and even coffee. And perhaps red wine.
Yeah, you know, and I tell people all the time, coffee can actually be healthy for you. Mm-hmm. It's when we start loading it with all the different flavors and sugars and milks, that's when it becomes a little bit of an issue. Mm-hmm. But a black coffee can be healthy.
Yeah, some studies show it's maybe neuroprotective, certainly against Parkinson's disease. That's one condition where it does seem to be helpful.
Yeah.
Even with the caffeine. So we mentioned red wine. What about alcohol? I mean, it zero tolerance for alcohol, or is there some possible benefit to moderate consumption, especially of red wine? But then you get to that point where maybe too much is a problem. What's your take?
Yeah, so, you know, this is going to be debatable. I'm somebody who thinks that there's actually no benefit to alcohol. The benefits that they tell you about alcohol, you can get from eating a variety of fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we certainly do know that excessive alcohol has a really negative impact on the brain, and it will actually dehydrate your brain. And on scans, your brain will look like it has shrunk.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And oftentimes I feel like people don't realize the reasons that they get sort of tipsy or buzzed or drunk is because of the negative impact that alcohol is having on their neurons.
Mm-hmm. Of course, we had very little experience seeing patients who have alcohol-related problems during our training down there on First Avenue, right, Dr. Duane?
Oh, I think it's got to be at least 3/4 of the patients we saw.
Exactly. And it seemed like there was a direct line from the Bowery to our emergency room. And so what's interesting, though, comment on this, please. One of the first things you do when you see an alcoholic, they're really out of it, is we gave them a shot of thiamine, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What's up with that? I mean, that's a nutritional therapy. See, we weren't doing any kind of nutritional therapy, but the one thing we knew to do is we gave those alcoholics thiamine. It was considered a medication, not even a nutrient. What's up with that?
Well, I guess we at the very least knew back then that alcohol caused some nutritional deficiencies, even if we didn't realize that, you know, a lot of the diseases that we see have a nutritional component to it. So
yeah, so that's a Wernicke's encephalopathy, which is a
absolutely
form of beriberi, I guess, thiamine deficiency. And sometimes these alcoholics would really wake up to, you know, after their thiamine injection. They seem to be able to engage in more reasonable conversations because they were a little demented when they didn't have enough B1. So when it comes to supplements, I mean, there's a whole variety of supplements that purport to support the brain. Do you believe that some could be part of a general preventive regimen?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I have people who I recommend fish oil to because that helps stabilize cell membranes and helps protect neurons. Supplements that are powerful antioxidants are really important. Supplements that are anti-inflammatory.
Are you thinking of things like alpha-lipoic acid? I mean, that's actually, some studies have shown it to be helpful in MS, for example, multiple sclerosis.
Yep. Absolutely. But, you know, a lot of supplements and are incredibly helpful. And I feel like oftentimes those conversations are not had on the level that they should be having, that we should be having with our patients, at least in traditional medicine. But they're incredibly useful.
Do you like curcumin as a said to be helpful not only for Alzheimer's disease, but even for depression, because there may be an inflammatory component to depression?
Yeah, I think, you know, all of the ones that are powerful anti-inflammatories are really important. And like I said, there's an inflammatory component to a lot of diseases that we see, especially in neurology, even though you would not think so. And we see a huge, huge benefit. And oftentimes we'll see a benefit occur before we see one occur with traditional medications.
Yeah, and that's really exciting. Another element of lifestyle that may impact brain health recently was revealed that people with periodontal disease have a higher risk of neurodegenerative disease. What's up with that?
Yeah, you know, I was speaking to a dentist recently who was playing my app, and she noticed that there was no level, so each level represents a different disease state, but there was no level referring to gum disease. And so she said, in the next version, there needs to be one. I said, you know what, you are absolutely right, because gum disease is certainly associated with neurodegenerative issues. Indeed. And I think that's, you know, largely because of the inflammatory component associated with the gum disease and its proximity to the brain.
Yeah, and that maybe toxins from the bacteria may migrate through the bloodstream. It's all so close up there that I mean, it's kind of a direct conduit to the brain, and maybe it has an important influence. I mean, again, all these factors have to be weighed. They're part of a comprehensive program of prevention. How often, I mean, presumably, most doctors don't check for B12 deficiency. You know, most specialties, they're not looking at B12. But neurologists are particularly interested in B12. So what are you finding when you check your people for B12 levels?
Yeah, so a lot of people have low B12 levels. And we certainly check them when people come in and tell us they're having memory problems or if they're having any nerve pain or numbness and tingling. A lot of people, like I said, they're in that low normal range, and we try to get that range towards the higher end of normal. And when we do that, we can see a significant benefit in their symptoms.
You know, you chose your words carefully because you didn't say deficiency. You say low normal range. And yep. A lot of doctors wait until they see the B12 is below 200 or below 180, which is a really exceedingly low, before they pull the trigger on B12 supplementation. Is it your belief that the B12 test is maybe a little bit too lenient when it comes to allowing people to walk around with inadequate B12?
Yeah, you know, if somebody comes to me and they're having symptoms and I check a B12 and it's 400, you know, I'm going to try to push that B12 up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody is different, obviously, and maybe some people can do well at 400, but a lot of people need that extra boost, especially as we all get a little bit older. So walking around with a B12 of 200 is pretty low, regardless of what the test is telling you. You know, you're not necessarily always treating a number, right? But you're always treating the person that you're caring for.
In younger patients, there's a nutrient that really has an impact on brain function. And it's a two-way street because too much is bad, too little is bad. It's kind of a Goldilocks effect. And that's iron. Do you see some patients with low iron sometimes experiencing cognitive problems?
Yeah, so oftentimes when I see patients with low iron, they're coming in with restless leg syndrome.
Ah,
right?
Yeah.
Which is related to iron deficiency. It's rare that I will see somebody come in with cognitive impairments, especially somebody who's young. And, you know, I check an iron and the
they're just tired. They're more subjectively fatigued.
Yeah.
It's not like they, you know, can't think. Although it is said that some attention deficit disorder in young girls can be associated with inadequate stores of iron, which are real common, especially when the young girls have really horrible diets and they're menstruating. They tend to be low. And finally, you know, a big part of the, quote, lifestyle of people over 50 or 60 is they're on meds. The most common meds include acid-blocking medications, antidepressants, anti-anxiety meds, sleep meds, meds that prevent you from having urinary frequency, asthma meds, and on it goes. You know, all these medications, do they conspire to rob you of memory?
Absolutely. I spend a lot of time working with primary care physicians to get patients off medications that they don't need. You know, patients will be referred to me for something like dizziness or memory problems. And when you go through their history, they're on 10, 15, or more different medications, which are having a negative impact, right, or giving them a lot of the symptoms that they're having. And so the first thing is assessing if they actually need all of these medications and trying to get them off of them, if possible.
It's called deprescribing, and it's a lost art in medicine. We need a new initiative to deprescribe to get people off unnecessary meds because they just keep piling on.
Right, and it's a process to do so because, you know, somebody who's on 15 different medications may have like 5 or 6 different prescribers.
It's a house of cards because you don't know what's holding a structure together. If you pull out the wrong card, the whole structure topples.
Right, yeah.
So what's your take on statins? Because there's a lot of controversy about statins, especially when it comes to brain health. You know, there's enough controversy about cardiovascular disease. We'll leave that one alone. But is it your feeling that statins help prevent brain deterioration, or can they in some cases contribute to brain deterioration? Because after all, lowering cholesterol, cholesterol is a component of the brain membranes, most important constituent of the brain, very high in cholesterol. Do you have any concerns about overprescribing statins?
Yeah, you know, I see people who develop memory problems because of statins. And I was having this conversation recently with somebody who said to me, oh, my doctor put me on a statin because my cholesterol is too high. So I said, well, what's your total cholesterol? They were like 200. I was like, why is that too high?
Yeah, right.
I was like, your brain needs cholesterol, right? And I think, you know, certainly not to sound jaded, medicine does a lot of really great things, and a lot of medications certainly help a lot of people. But the business of medicine certainly involves putting out a lot of prescription drugs. And if you're the company that's putting out the statins and you're sponsoring a lot of these studies and you're coming out with recommendations for how much medication you should be giving for certain cholesterol levels, you're certainly going to bump it up in your favor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think sometimes it does more harm for our patients than it does good, right? Especially when you look at something like cholesterol, where oftentimes you can bring the cholesterol down with lifestyle changes. Not always, mm-hmm. but most of the times you can.
Or you can bypass the cholesterol, minimize the risk by bringing other factors down, getting patients to normalize their weight and improve their exercise status and improve their blood sugar, for example.
Absolutely.
And finally, diabetes, big risk factor for brain problems. And a lot of people without overt diabetes, they've got, you know, what's called borderline cheap stuff. Maybe their internist isn't even that concerned because most patients have a borderline hemoglobin A1C.
Right. Yeah, you know, there's some people that will tell you, some neurologists and neuroscientists that will tell you that there's such a close association between diabetes and Alzheimer's disease that they consider Alzheimer's disease type 3 diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody agrees with that, but what is certainly true is that the smallest blood vessels in your brain cannot handle high blood pressures and high blood sugars. And over time, that does a significant amount of damage. And I can't tell you how often, you know, somebody gets a CAT scan or an MRI, and we'll see small strokes that they never knew that they had. But we'll mm-hmm. also see a lot of damage throughout their brain that's mm-hmm. accumulated over the years.
So these so-called white spots, you know, that indicate scarring where people weren't aware of the fact that they had a mini event, and it actually knocked out some part of their brain.
Exactly. And now their brain doesn't have the same kind of reserve that they should have. And so the smallest event can kind of tip them over.
Hmm. That might have been a couple of all-nighters that I pulled in med school, too. I'm not even sure.
I'm pretty sure we've got some scarring from that.
I don't even want to know. I haven't had my first brain MRI, and I'm not anxious to do so. Somebody said, hey, we could do it for free, I think I'd pass.
Well, okay. I would definitely pass.
Yeah. You don't want to know. So, great stuff. And, you know, you can learn more by downloading this fun app. Tell us about the app again, Dr. Doyon.
So the app is called Dr. Doyon's BrainFit, or you can look up BrainFit in the Apple Store or in Google Play. BrainFit is one word. And it's a game that teaches people about how everyday lifestyle choices and the foods that we eat, the exercise that we engage in, how that impacts our overall health, as well as the health of our brains. And it's organized into different levels, and each level represents a different disease state. So you get to learn about that disease. You get to learn about the impact that eating and exercise has on that disease while playing a really fun game.
Indeed. It's a great app, and really congratulations on developing it. Also, if you want to subscribe to the newsletter of the Inle Brain Fit Institute, go to Inle, I-N-L-E, brainfitinstitute.com. By the way, what does Inle stand for?
So Inle is actually short for Aaron Lee, which was a god of health and wellness who was also the physician to all the other gods.
Oh, okay. A little Greek mythology thrown in there. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, and congratulations, Dr. Doyon. And by the way, you want to give out information about if patients want to contact you. Those in the metropolitan area can access your offices in Teaneck and Hackensack. Is that correct?
Yep, and the best way to contact me is to go to my website, www.inlebrainfitinstitute.com.
Okay, good stuff. Thank you very much for joining us, and thanks for being of such service to the public. I think you're getting the word out about some very, very important issues, especially in lieu of the fact that we don't have quick fixes or cures for many of these devastating diseases yet.
Well, thank you for having me. This is awesome.
So my pleasure.
You.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. If you happen to be on a weight loss regimen, studies show that as fat cells shrink, they release stored toxins into the system that can actually poison metabolic pathways and slow your metabolism, causing your weight to plateau even in the face of stringent diet adherence. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Detox Protocol, a collection of carefully curated supplements to mobilize toxin elimination, easing the blahs that sometimes compromise your dietary resolve. The Intelligent Medicine Detox Protocol is an easy way to get the exact combination of the targeted nutrients you need. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for more information and to purchase. Plus, you'll find easy-to-follow links to our heart health and immunity protocols and much more. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.